You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Yes, it is on this Monday night. What is up? 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. It is Carlin right here on 98.7 ESPN New York. We are jam-packed over the next few hours. Excited to spend time with you. Let's get it rolling on the phones in just a few minutes at 800-919-ESPN. We'll spend some time on the passing of the legendary Don Shula and why it wasn't just about football for Don Shula. We will also spend some time a little bit later on getting into all the different plans that continue to make their way around when it comes to sports returning and why it's just not reasonable to expect that to be happening soon. But we begin with episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance last night. Now, it's centered around so many different things, and the Knicks were obviously a big part of it in that series in 1993. But we will get to all of that in due time. I think there are a couple of things that you take out of it that you really like and a couple of things that you take out of it that you really don't like. Let's start with what you don't like. It's becoming clearer and clearer that as much as you're going to get some truth and you're going to get an honest Michael Jordan from his perspective, it's very rare that you're going to get in this documentary the other side of Jordan, the side that shows how difficult he could be to play with. He wasn't the best guy in the world. You see the stuff about the gambling. Okay. But you also continue to see the fingers pointed at the people that he blamed, whether it was Jerry Krause continuing to get on him and knock him to no end for everything and making sure that it's pointed out again how he talks about how great the organization is and it's all about winning with the organization. It's not anything else. You know, you can paint pictures however you want to paint them. And I'm enjoying The Last Dance for what it is, and that's entertainment. But this is drawn from the picture of Michael Jordan. It is drawn from the mind of Michael Jordan, the way this picture is being drawn right now. What you're seeing is how Michael Jordan saw things. And rarely are you seeing it from an outside disagreeing perspective other than maybe Isaiah Thomas. And that's just based more on hatred than anything else. So I am starting to find it a little bit frustrating. I did not expect this to be the greatest piece of journalism in the world. I want to enjoy it more for just looking back and being able to see Michael Jordan play again in his prime. To me, that's been the best part about this whole thing. This opportunity to see Michael Jordan play again in his prime, especially for those young enough to have not seen it, to have not understood what he was, to have not understood that there was a player behind the shoes that is better than any player you have ever seen. And that includes LeBron James. It's not worth discussing anymore. He absolutely was. And the thing that drove him was the way that he took everything personally. And yes, he could turn anything into a personal slight against himself, and that's what drove him to be great, to be this different person. But Jordan, and I heard the guys using the word earlier, it's 100% true. Michael Jordan's maniacal. Maniacal. In the way that he handles everything in his life. And it's just constantly about beating you and about being better. Is there something wrong with that? Not really. I guess not. I mean, as long as you are doing things on the up and up, I don't have a real problem with it. I think that he did obviously a lot of good with his platform. I think it's very difficult to get on someone for not taking up a political platform in his situation. You know, the Republicans joke is one thing. If he said it in jest, okay. If it was strictly a business decision, that's not right. If you don't want to feel, if you don't feel comfortable talking about it, we shouldn't be turning to our sports celebrities with undue pressure to do anything when it comes to political beliefs, anything like that. Now, I understand everything that was going on there, but if you're expecting people to respond to Michael Jordan and what he's going to do from a political standpoint, you have to understand him not doing something is not speaking up against it. Putting him in that position is unfair. Putting him in that position is putting your beliefs on somebody else and saying you should do that. You know, you could talk about Muhammad Ali and you can talk about other famous sports individuals who have done things that they believed and they stood up for because it's what they believed. You should never be put on him individually to go and take control of a political situation unless he believed it. Nobody else should force him into that position. But as much as I'm talking about Michael Jordan being maniacal, being a guy that just could not stand to lose, being someone that was constantly driven and trying to drive everyone else around him to have the exact same motivation and abusing them in ways. And we haven't even seen the best of it. Like, you know, that thought about him being too hard on Scotty Burrell, we really haven't seen that yet. Like, if he was worried about people thinking he's a jerk, if that's coming, I assume it's coming at some point, okay. But there's been no reason to think full on in this that Jordan has been a complete jerk. But the one thing that I think does come across with having his mentality and being as great as he is, what drove him was what also brought a loneliness to him. That was no way to live a life in a time where you are the best athlete in the world, but he didn't really have any other choice. When you see him sitting in a dark room, a hotel room, all day long, killing time until it's time to go play basketball again, when you see him making it about himself with Scottie Pippen outside a shoot around trying to go make his tee time on an off day, you understand that Michael Jordan has never been about anything but Michael Jordan because everybody else made it about him too. It's not a terrible thing. If you're self-involved, you're self-involved. If you're doing it and advancing at the detriment of others, not just beating them, but going under the table and going behind the scenes and backstabbing and that kind of thing, that's wrong. We don't get the impression that that was ever the case with Michael Jordan. But what we do get to see is a loneliness to who he was, and frankly, I think still is, because he is still one of the most recognizable faces on the planet, that what drove him was also what was potentially most damaging to him. What drove him professionally, personally, was most damaging to him. Whether it was the gambling, and I'm not going to sit there and say that a guy has a problem or not, because I'm not in his shoes. We've all heard all the different rumors, whether it was the idea that Jordan went away and after the 93 season because David Stern told him to, because it was such a bad look around how bad his gambling was getting. And Michael doing an interview with Ahmad Rashad with sunglasses on before game one of the finals. I mean, you know, all of them were terrible looks. But asking him to be something that he's not is unfair. But I don't know that I would want to be like Mike either. People equate money with happiness, and it's just not there. I don't know if Michael Jordan's happy or not. He's had it obviously an unbelievable life in so many different ways. But there is a sadness there that you can see if you watch in how he has to live his life. So sequestered and you know, sealed off because he's just going to get besieged when he goes out publicly. Imagine trying to do that. Imagine you could not go anywhere and you were a prisoner in your own life. Well, what drove Michael Jordan to become the global presence that he was and is still? Also, worked to the biggest detriment against him on a personal level in that life. It is interesting that I think without him meaning it to happen, I was one of the people that last night maybe felt a little bit sad for him. And I know that's crazy. Look, I get it. He's Michael Jordan. Can you imagine a better life? That really goes back to trying to understand what he's going through at that time and why maybe he so desperately wanted to get away from it and try to live a different life, except whether he wanted to believe it or not, he was never going to be able to do that because he was Michael Jordan. And maybe there was just part of him that a year and a half later accepted it, didn't want to be a failure at something he wasn't amazing at, like baseball. He wasn't. And let me go back to being what I'm great at and being better than everybody else at. Because if I'm going to live like this, I might as well excel on the big stage. There's a lot there to unravel. And you're getting most of it from his perspective. And would I like it to be a little bit more balanced? Maybe. Maybe. I think it's tough to continue to beat up on a guy who's dead. But at the same time, Jerry Krause, look, a lot of what was going on in Chicago at the time, you know, it's not like this is the first time that this picture has been painted. It's not like Michael went out to make the narrative his own just in this. People in Chicago hate Jerry Krause for breaking it up. They do. And you understand why. I would love for it to be a little bit more balanced, but I'm being entertained by what it is. And there are so many different aspects of this that we'll get into. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Whether it's his being maniacal on and off the court in a lot of what he did, the loneliness of being him, there's also so much else to unpack, whether it's the global brand that he became, the worst business decision ever made by any corporate person, whether it's the gambling, whether it's the Knicks and Bulls series, whether it be in 93 or elsewhere. It's all there for you to talk about to start tonight at 800-919-3776. We will also get into the life and times of Don Shula. Rich Kleiman, who was on last week with Michael and the boys, and of course, was on for an hour with us a couple weeks ago, is going to call in, wants to talk all about Knicks Bulls, being a Knicks fan that he was. As he texted me last night, I've got a PhD in this. I want to get into it, so I'm looking forward to that. He'll chime in around 8 o'clock tonight. So there's a lot on the table for you.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
I always hate this particular take, but in this case, I think it applies. You know, whenever you tell somebody, well, it could always be worse, you could always be blah, 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 you know, that to me is like depriving somebody of their feelings of anger or, you know, sadness, whatever. I don't think that's right. Yes, we know There is always someone that has it worse than you do. But in this one case, this one very specific case, I will point it to someone who will always have it a little bit worse than you. Whoever the guy is at Adidas that decided we can't give Michael Jordan his own shoe. That guy will always, always have it worse than me, you, virtually everybody. Because you talk about making the worst business decision in history. That's it. That's it. We can't give this kid Jordan his own shoe? Wow. Holy cow. That's tough to take. He was dying to be wearing Adidas. And he goes to Nike. And I know that you could never see that coming, right? But if you're that guy, whoever that one guy was, the one guy who, I don't know if it was the president of the company or whoever it was. You know, there was one guy that said, we can't do this with this guy, Jordan. Whoever that person was will always have it worse than you, me, and everyone. That is the worst business decision in the history of the world. Imagine being that person and leaving Adidas and going somewhere else and trying to get another job. Well, what'd you do at Adidas? Well, I was in charge of marketing and branding and all that. Oh, really? Well, tell me, some of your things that you've done. Well, I did this, and this. Wait a second. Did you guys try to get Michael Jordan when he came out? How did he end up at Nike? Yeah, I didn't want to give him the deal. I didn't think we should give him his own shoe. That freaking guy. Wow. Whoever that person was will always have my sympathy, my empathy. I mean, I've made bad decisions in my life. Whenever you're beating yourself up over making a bad decision, think about that guy. I don't want to deprive you of your emotions, but that guy will always have it worse than you till the day he goes to the grave, if he hasn't already. 800-919-3776. Sound off the alarms. It's Richard in Manhattan. Richard, what's going on?
Hi, Chris. Chris, you can't say that Michael Jordan was better than Bill Russell. Bill Russell won 11 championships?
Yeah, I know that. I know he did. I know he won
11 out of 13.
I know he beat Wilt. I understand all of that. I'm telling you that Michael Jordan, when you factor everything in, when you factor not being 7 foot tall, when you factor
Bill Russell was 6'9".
Richard, you get the point. Bill Russell's an all-time incredible player. They are different players. You want to say Bill Russell's the greatest center of all time? Well, Kareem's the greatest center of all time. But Bill Russell's obviously in the top three. He owned Wilt Chamberlain, absolutely owned him on every front.
He owned everybody on every team.
But Richard, by saying that Michael Jordan's the greatest player of all time is not knocking Bill Russell.
What could Russell have done more?
Russell did everything that he could, but they were different players.
That makes him not as good as Michael Jordan?
What?
That makes him not as good as Michael Jordan because he was different?
I think, Richard, he was more physically gifted than Michael Jordan. Jordan's 6'6 as a guard, and he's doing the things that he's doing. And,
Russell
it's not
block
a
shots.
Richard, it's not a knock on him.
Okay. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I just said was better than Russell.
Was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for 17 out of his 20 years. There was very rarely a time that Kareem was not Kareem. He came into the league and was dominant from game one until his last two or three years.
So probably Jordan.
No, Jordan wasn't Jordan his first 2 years, certainly.
Jordan was dominant from game one. He absolutely
No. Maybe the first year he wasn't. No,
Richard, go back and watch the series.
Okay, all right.
Have you watched the series?
Okay, he was great.
Okay, Richard, come on.
Did you read today's article in the Post, Mike Vaccaro?
About what?
Oh, what an article. Chris, this Vaccaro.
Remind me, Mike is a tremendous columnist. Just
unbelievable. He's better to read now during when there's no sports.
Richard, what was it about?
55 years ago today, May 4th, 1965, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Oh, yes. The decision to go to UCLA. Yes, I did see it.
Now, did you read why?
Yes.
He was going to go to St. John's, but because Joe Lapchick was retiring because he was 65, and I guess St. John's or all colleges had a I don't think all schools did, but St. John's had a mandatory age of 65 retirement. Now, Lou Alcindor, his relationship was with Joe Lapchick. Now, of course, Lou Carnesecca was the coach, and he didn't have
you
that
are
thing.
Just regurgitating the entire article right now, Richard. Thanks for the call. Thank you for the call, Richard. Goodbye. All you're doing is summarizing the article. You're giving me a book report. Mike Vaccaro's the best columnist in the city. I did see the article. Yes, I did. I don't need a synopsis of the entire article. I'm not like this. I don't have rage, really. I mean, have I sent a text message or two that I regretted? Sure. But Richard makes me rageful at times. I don't know why that is. Well, I got my therapist tomorrow, so we can talk about that. Why do I get angry at Richard from Manhattan? And my guess would be the therapist, who occasionally listens to the show, would say, I get it. It's not you, it's him.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, guys, Spike in Jersey up next. Spike, what's cooking, brother? How are you?
Good evening, my friend. This has been a bad day for me, reliving that Knick thing. Climbing was interesting. I'm having this recurring dream since I was at that game, and I'll go over it with you real quickly in a second. But I feel like I'm going to wake up looking like Dr. Irwin Corey. That's scary stuff, man. That's scary. June 3rd, 93. Three guys, we split tickets. I don't know. We got 20 games. Well, it was 10 games each. You know how that works.
Yep.
And we had good receipts, 94H. And that day, they were $25. And I think John Filippelli was in on it at the beginning, and we made a lot of money and moved downstairs. But because we never saw the other guys, but we all had playoff tickets. Long story short, we parked across the street at the parking lot. You know where that is. And we go in, meet and get burgers and fries somewhere a couple hours before the game and BS about the game. We were feeling good, up 2-0. So we park, and the players park their car there. I told this story on two other programs today, but I know listeners come in and out. So Hugh Hollins is walking out. He's officiating that game. And I go, tighten up the calls tonight, you. And, you know, I get, you know, these jerks telling me what to do on my job, look, you know, but what do I care? I wanted to win. This is way before the other thing. So we go out, and we're planning the game, and everyone has their, I told Michael, I told the boys in midday, I told everyone has the wrong impression of that game. The Knicks shot 20 for 35 from the free throw line in that game. 20 for 35.
Mm-hmm. Terrible.
That's it. The game's over. That never should have come down to that last play. Never. 20 for 35.
No, look. Look, I think the Game 3 point that Van Gundy makes is really the most damning of losing that series, is that they came out and they were not ready to play in that game.
They were not prepared. So the game, you know, the game goes over. If you could pull the box up, but I don't think anyone on Chicago bench scored. Maybe one basket.
and all their starters were in double figures. They out-rebounded the Knicks, and they just couldn't put the free throws in. You've done enough college basketball games. You've been around basketball. This was the worst. I said to KJ, I said, this was worse than losing Game 7 in Houston. Forget the circumstances being, you know, the championship, but this was worse because it was the Bulls. And I know you understand what I'm saying. You had to beat the Bulls. You wanted to get this guy out of the way. At least we won Game 6 in Houston, and then had that long layover. But we walked out of there like, not the Charles Smith thing. He never was in position. Rich Kleiman said something about he couldn't go up strong and dunk it. First of all, they're not going to call a foul. In those days, they had a mugger guy. I mean, literally, take a knife out on the court to get a foul called. But missing 15 free throws in a game at home, you're not prepared. But that's the way it is. We got to live with that at Knicks fans. And I'll leave you with this. Anyone listening can hear my voice. And you know it, because you were producing at that time. This city, I'm trying to convince my wife, we were together 20 years, how this city, you watching a Knicks game, you timed your whole day around it? You couldn't wait for basket to basket, dribble to dribble, am I right?
Yeah, listen, Spike, it was incredible. It was absolutely incredible, the energy level that was here, and thanks for the call. You can just never get around what that was and not get excited. And, you know, you had the finals, you had the playoffs, you had the Heat series after that. It was not quite at that same level. It was up there. But, man, more than anything, you know, you just missed the energy of the whole thing because we haven't had that forever. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. It's Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. We will touch on the life and times of Don Shula when we come back. More of your calls, plenty of open lines on whatever you'd like to discuss. Later on, I was very annoyed at Ahmad Rashad for last night, and I'll tell you why in just a bit. And you will not believe who was playing Joe Exotic in the movie.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Carlin, 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776. We will get back to the last dance in Jordan in just a little bit. We've got open lines. You want to get on board? We'll get to the calls here shortly. You can get all into that stuff. And why I actually came out of last night feeling a little bit sad for Michael Jordan. But I want to spend some time on Don Shula and his passing today at the age of 90. Look, Don Shula as a football coach, just, I don't know that we'll ever have a full appreciation of him, because I didn't get to see Don Shula when he was at his absolute apex. I remember the Super Bowl against the Redskins where John Riggins went nuts. I remember the Dolphins getting demolished by the 49ers in Marino's only Super Bowl appearance. But there are a few things to realize about Don Shula if you don't. Number one is that Don Shula only had two losing seasons in 33 years. Between being the coach of the Colts and the Miami Dolphins. Two losing seasons in 33 years. That is absolutely remarkable. He has the only undefeated team in NFL history. He developed one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game in Marino, top three to four, maybe. And as I said earlier, I mean, this is a coach who took a team to the Super Bowl with David Woodley as his quarterback. I mean, David Woodley, go look at who David Woodley is. If you think Trent Dilfer was bad, if you think Brad Johnson was bad, David Woodley, to me, is the worst starting quarterback to ever start a Super Bowl game. He was awful, awful. And yet somehow, Don Shula got that team to a Super Bowl and got to six overall, won two of them, and winningest coach in NFL history with 347, I think the number is. Few things, though. You know, remember that he started in Baltimore, and we obviously, you know, I personally wasn't around for that. We know about Super Bowl III with Namath. You heard Joe earlier today with Michael, Peter, and Don talking about Don Shula. But his legacy outside of football is in building a city, frankly. And that city is the city of Miami. Think about this for a minute. Don Shula went to a city where the franchise with the Dolphins was nothing. He went there before there was the big three. And Wade and LeBron and Bosh, 30 years before. He went there before the Miami Marlins were even existed. The same thing with the Heat. Didn't exist. For Alonzo Mourning and Tim Hardaway and all those guys. The Marlins win two championships. Was there well before that. Was there well before the Florida Panthers. And was there well before the University of Miami was anything to write home about in football. Don Shula built Miami into a sports city because of the Dolphins. He absolutely created a dynamic in the town that turned it into more of a sports town. And think about this for a minute. What is Miami about? Well, it's primarily about transplants, really. People from up here who went down there to retire. People from Cuba who came over, and other Latin American countries that came to Miami and settled there. And it is about as big of a melting pot as there is. And Don Shula took this franchise and brought in and had the only perfect season in NFL history with it, with a quarterback with greasy hurt with Earl Morrill. Won these championships year after year, is having winning seasons. People cared about the Miami Dolphins. And it's funny, after Don Shula was gone, it really took the Heat to start to bring sports back a little bit. But the only reason they were there was Don Shula. The only reason that the Florida Panthers existed was Don Shula. The only reason the Florida Marlins existed was Don Shula. He made it possible for Miami to be a successful sports town. Think about that for a second. That's a town that did not have four professional teams not all that long ago. It had one professional team and some highlight. So he took this city and became this paternal figure in this town and turned it into a sports city, bringing more pride to that city. You know, Miami has had its reputations over the years. It's a party city. There are so many different things that kind of come through it, whether you think of late nights and South Beach and, you know, you think about just all the different cultures that exist there. And it can also be a pretty tough town, too. You know, the Orange Bowl was in the middle of a pretty rough neighborhood. But through his success with this football team and this organization, he made it possible for other leagues to look at Miami as a viable place to have a team. The Miami Heat came about as an expansion team because Don Shula did what he did with the Dolphins. The Florida Panthers came about as an expansion team because of what Don Shula did, what he did with the Dolphins. Same thing with the Marlins, who won two championships. And not only that, but think about this for a second. When those teams weren't good in the early 90s, when they were bad teams and, they were just starting out as organizations, people weren't all that excited about it. So I had a friend who did sports talk shows in Miami back then. And I'm always curious as to specific towns, how they respond to their sports. Like, what do they care about the most? What do they live and die with? That kind of thing. Don Shula made the Miami Dolphins just that, the thing that they live and die with. So I'm talking to this friend, and I said, so how do you do shows here? If you, what do you lead the program with if all things are equal? And he said, honestly, people don't care about the Marlins. And this was a year or two before they bought their first championship. People don't care about the Heat. And this was really before the Heat and the Knicks started to build into a massive rivalry. People didn't really care about the Panthers, who started to get good after that, were built by Bill Torrey. He said, you have to say something about the Dolphins. You have to talk about the Dolphins. You really have to make that the crux of the discussion to get people into it and fired up. And he said, sometimes you have to make things up. Just as far as your opinion, is something ridiculous that you don't even necessarily buy into. But because people care about the Dolphins so much, they respond to that. And I was reading Dan Lebatard's column today in the Miami Herald about the passing of Don Shula, and he makes all these points. And then he really brings to the forefront the point that the Dolphins have been killed as a franchise since. Just absolutely destroyed. They destroyed what he built. I mean, remember when Shula is on the way out and everybody's saying he's too old, he's got to go, we need Jimmy Johnson, we need this, we need that? How did all of that work out? The Dolphins have been so bad for so long, and it really should make us appreciate what Don Shula did for 25 years in Miami and make us realize just how remarkable it was. Because now, what do we always talk about when we talk about the greatest coaches of all time? Bill Belichick, right? 6 Super Bowls. I'd argue, when you really look at it, what Don Shula did in his career was equally as impressive. Now, Belichick may catch Shula. I think he's at 274 wins career, and he's 25 seasons altogether between Cleveland and New England. But how about this last quote from Shula, who was asked recently about what he wants people to remember about him? I want people to remember that we did it the right way and we didn't try to cheat our way through it. Oof. A haymaker from Shula toward Belichick on the way out the door. How about that?
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.